Annie, the restaurant's general manager, demands when he catches sight of me hiding in the beverage station. I'm seated on a blue rack that's meant to be used to store pint glasses and not, you know, my butt. Admittedly, it's not the most comfortable, but beggars can't be choosers. I flip the menu over on my knee so that Vittoria's logo of the Sicilian countryside stares up at me. Zoe. Manny's polished leather shoes clip across the tiled floor.
How much of the menu do you know?
My fingers tap anxiously over Sicily. The specialty cocktails? I sneak a quick peek at the black typography. If I fake it, I can probably get through the appetizers.
It'll have to do.
The menu slips from my grasp as he steals it, and I feel like he's straight up taken away my lifeline.
Table 21 is all yours.
I don't want it to be all mine. Sure, serving tables shouldn't be all that different from serving high-end celebrities. I'm a people person. They like me, I like them. Not to sound arrogant or anything, but this shouldn't be a problem. Except at the thought of recreating the fiasco with the mayor all over again, the blood immediately seeps from my face. Aren't servers supposed to have a training period? I eye the menu Manny clutches in one hand, wondering how desperate I'll look if I try to take it back. As if reading my thoughts, he tucks it under his armpit and clamps down.
Our chef quit today, and he took most of the serving staff. I don't care if you fake your way through the entire night. Get out there and pretend you know what the hell you're talking about.
His monologue ends in pure silence. I stare at the menu longingly. He watches me like he's expecting me to make a break for it. After 30 seconds, I ask, "Where's table 21 again?" His eyes squeeze shut.
"Lover's Lane."
Ah. More silence. I open my mouth. "Which lane is that?" In response, all he does is lift his arm and point at the swinging door leading to the dining area. I stealthily sneak a peek at the printout of the dining room layout on my way out of the kitchen. Lover's Lane, to the right and along the back wall of the restaurant. I've got this. At this time of night, Vittoria is packed with patrons. When my dad first opened the restaurant about 20 years ago, its first rendition was more pizza joint and less fine dining atmosphere. But as the years bled into one another, and as his phone calls to me grew more sporadic, the busier he became. Thanks to the restaurant's newfound fame, Vittoria slowly climbed the ranks. Now one of Boston's trendiest restaurants, Vittoria can be found in the historic Italian neighborhood of the North End. The interior is designed with exposed brick walls, wrought iron sconces and chandeliers, and pristine white tablecloths. The menu regularly scores high reviews from top food bloggers, and from what my dad has told me, it's not uncommon to see celebrities step through Vittoria's front doors. Sidling up to the hostess stand, I snag a vase of water and count my way over to table 21 in Lover's Lane. 18, 19, 20. Here we are. I slide my finger into my shirt collar and subtly straighten my black bow tie. Taking a deep breath, I step up to the table and grin. "Hi there. Welcome to Vittoria." A blonde-haired woman blinks back at me. "My date is in the restroom." Gotta love the people who must let everyone know that they aren't eating alone. Once, I was just like them. Recently, I've learned to enjoy my independence. I can eat when I want, where I want. And thank God I no longer have to worry about a man telling me to lay off the second slice of cheesecake. My cheesecake, my rules. My gaze drops to the woman's dress, which borders on Academy Award-worthy. It's so fancy. While my dad's restaurant is largely upscale, it still doesn't call for, well, this. The woman is encased in cheetah print silk. It's rather stunning, actually. I almost want to ask her where she purchased it. Her incredibly breathy, high-pitched voice stops me.
"Did you hear? You can come back in 5 minutes."
"Let me give you some water while you wait," I murmur, lifting the vase. My elbow hikes up as I lean forward, cutting short when it hits flesh. There's a male grunt, a gritty curse. Oh, no. I whip around to apologize, only to be stilled by strong masculine fingers.
Give me a second,
the voice growls, and instant awareness hits me. I know that voice way too well. Andre. Please, for the love of all things holy, someone just end my misery.
Oh, my God,
the blonde exclaims, her eyes landing on the NHL's best enforcer behind me.
Are you okay?
With Andre's fingers still locked around my elbow and my back to his chest, our little position is starting to feel way too familiar.
I'm fine,
he says between gritted teeth.
I'm pretty sure she nailed you in that...
Suzanne.
The blonde clamps her mouth shut, sitting back primly in her seat as she shoots daggers in my direction. Like this is my fault, and yes, theoretically I did potentially elbow him in the crown jewels, but I certainly didn't ask for him to swoop up behind me all stealthy ninja-like. With the vase of water still clutched in my hand, I decide there's no other recourse. Andre, I say evenly, would you please let go of me?
Zoe?
His hand drops from my arm like I've combusted into fire. I turn around, water vase clutched tightly. The scowl on his face is the stuff of legends, but beneath the frown, beneath all that bad attitude, I sense his shock at finding me here. And boy, the glint of surprise in his black eyes warms me considerably. Andre Beaumont is not the sort of man that one frequently one-ups, and the fact that I've managed to do so? Yeah, it feels good. Mentally, I give myself a pat on the back. I glance down to where his big hand is pressed flat against his stomach. Did I get you where it hurts? I ask, with a downward tilt of my chin. The shock evaporates from his expression like a wisp of smoke, and the hard, impenetrable glare shifts back into place.
Are you hoping that you did?
He asks, gruffly. My shoulders lift in a lazy shrug. Wrong place, wrong time. Dark eyes narrow on my face.
Is that a dig?
On the fact that you stood me up today and didn't bother to respond to any of my calls or text messages? I offer another shrug, noting the way that each time I do so, his eyes narrow further. Any more of that, and he'll be staring out at me through mere slits. The part of me that's still bitter about everything encourages me to do just that, to push him over the ledge and see what happens. Maybe.
Maybe,
he reiterates stonily. Depends on whether you actually had a good reason for not showing, like saving homeless puppies or volunteering at an elderly home. His arms cross over his burly chest. This time he isn't wearing a t-shirt, and I can't stop myself from taking in my fill. Black button down, open at the neck to reveal the tan column of his throat, matching black slacks that do nothing to hide his muscular thighs. He clears his throat, and it's enough for me to blink up at his face. He's totally caught me staring, but I refuse to cower. In the end, he blows out a frustrated breath.
Maybe I was saving puppies and volunteering. Maybe I thought that our scheduled meeting could be rescheduled.
Oh, don't you worry, I tell him with a jovial pat-pat to his hard chest. We have 30 days to make sure that all goes as planned. A tick starts in his jaw, and I stifle a victorious grin. Now, we don't want to leave your date hanging. I shoo him into the booth with my free hand. Let's try the water thing again, shall we? While Andre stews in muteness, his expression one that can only be filed under pissed-off man, his date flits her hand over his chest and down toward his waist. I assume it's his waist, but maybe she's trying for something else under the table. Andre has obviously made it abundantly clear that public places don't deter him in the slightest when it comes to sex. But he does surprise me when he captures her wrists and presses her hands to the tabletop. His gaze still hasn't left me.
Are you stalking me?
He asks, voice low. I top off his date's glass with water and then do the same for his. I work here. temporarily, just for tonight. Definitely not on a permanent basis. So no, I continue, casually tucking the water vase against my hip. In order for me to stalk you, I'd have to be emotionally invested.
And you're not?
Emotionally invested? Ha! I try to withhold my laugh for a few reasons. The first one being that he is on a date with another woman, and seeing as how we haven't even spoken for the better part of a year, being emotionally invested with the man in front of me is absolutely a no-go. I may have been so at one time. Maybe. But surely not now. I know better. He waits for me to continue, and I've got a half a mind to tell him that he'll be waiting forever. But then he reaches for the water I've just filled and takes a healthy sip. His throat works down the liquid, and I'd be lying if I said he didn't look sexy as hell right now, which really isn't fair, because he doesn't seem the slightest bit affected by my presence, only at the potential thought that I've become his personal stalker. He places the glass on the table, then leans back in the booth, arm resting along the top to stare up at me.
I think you are.
My back stiffens. I think you're delusional.
Well, I don't know what I think, Suzanne cuts in testily. But I do know that if you don't run along now and get us some of that delicious bread, I'm going to request that you be removed from our table.
I don't have it in me to hate her because she's so right. She might be on a date with the man who left me high and dry, but I have no reason to be hanging around like a lovesick fool, especially since I'm the furthest thing from it. I murmur my apologies, take their cocktail orders, and book it back to the kitchen. Only once I've burst through the swinging doors do I heave in a deep breath. Of all the people who I could be serving tonight, Andre Beaumont is the last person I expected to find seated in my section. Lover's Lane. Oh, the irony. I sincerely doubt Andre has the capabilities to love anything, including a dog, and that's saying something. Almost maniacally, I shove two loaves of bread into a wicker basket, plop it on a round, black tray, and try to make my way to the bar. I skim my gaze over my section and note a new couple being seated. The stampede is about to start, and there's a good chance my body will be found crushed and flattened by the time the night's over. Here, the bartender mutters as she slides a whiskey and coke, as well as a sex on the beach over to me. Don't spill these. She stabs the printout orders onto a toothpick and barely spares me another glance before heading to the opposite side of the bar. Well then, gotta love them when they're friendly. Balancing the tray, I carefully set the two cocktails beside the basket of bread and then weave my way through the white-clothed tables. I promise the new couple that I'll be right with them, holding my tray against my hip like a pro, and continue on to the table of doom. The moment I set the basket on the table, Suzanne snags two pieces of bread and digs in with full gusto. Sex on the beach, I say, precariously lifting the brightly colored drink from my tray and placing it before Andre's date. And, I turn to Andre, a whiskey and coke. His brows furrow.
I asked for only a soda.
My limbs freeze and my gaze darts to his. Mentally, I rewind our conversation. Oh, he did ask for only a soda. A coke, to be precise. My mouth opens before I bite my lower lip, because what can I say? I remember your favorite drink. Sorry, apparently I haven't broken the habit of ordering for you. Please don't make this weird. Yeah, because any of those options will go over tremendously well. Praying that he doesn't read into the situation, I mutter, I'm sorry, I'll get that coke for you. I reach out to grab the cocktail, but he moves it away from my hand at the last moment.
I'll drink it.
But you didn't ask for it. His gaze lands on my face, and maybe I'm crazy. Totally possible. Maybe I'm imagining things. Also possible. But his dark eyes crinkle at the corners, as though he's trying desperately not to smile.
I'll drink it, Zoe.
Zoe. His old nickname for me. Damn, but I wish it didn't feel so good to hear him call me that. Softly, I say, okay. do not read into the situation. Somberly, I take their food order and dart back into the kitchen to input it all into the POS system. My dad hollers at me from behind the grill, cracking jokes about the McKinseys taking over Victoria. The staff don't laugh, as they're deep in the weeds and have that crazed eye thing going on. I'm pretty sure that I have it, too. For the next hour or so, I flit from table to table in Lover's Lane. I pour water into glasses and drop off bread baskets. I manage to correctly bring out food and succeed in not sending mussels cascading from the sky. I'm so busy, actually, that I don't realize that the rush has died down completely until there's almost no one left in the restaurant. An elderly couple is seated outside of my section, on the other side of the restaurant, and two foretops have joined forces to sing Dean Martin at the top of their lungs. Since they're also not in my section, I summarily dismiss them as not my problem. But not even I can resist the draw of Dean Martin. I sway a little, side to side, enjoying the patron's offbeat tempo, a small smile flitting to my face, until my gaze lands on the sole figure at the bar, Andre. Even though he's facing away from me, I recognize his muscular frame in a heartbeat. His dark hair is all disheveled from his fingers, or maybe from Suzanne's, and his crisp dinner jacket is laid over the bar stool next to his. Against my better judgment, I follow the line of his spine, sweeping my gaze down over his athletic body. He's seated with one foot up on the bar stool's footrest, while his other is planted on the floor. As if sensing my stare, Andre glances over his shoulder, and his dark eyes find me watching him. It's too late to run, too late to turn away and pretend that I haven't been standing here ogling him. The man might be an asshole, but he's the sexiest asshole I've ever met. His eyebrow quirks up, an obvious dare for me to come closer. And damn my feet, but I do just that. As if tethered to him by an invisible string, the distance between us dissipates until I'm standing right in front of him. Since he's still seated, we're almost at eye level for once, and there's no hiding the way he studies me intently, not saying a single word. It's an intimidation tactic I've seen him use on his opponents in the rink. Like a lion after its prey, he sits, waiting, prolonging the moment until I give away my ace and he can swipe in for the kill. Feeling uncomfortable, I focus my attention on his cocktail. Another whiskey and coke. Why is he still here? Where's your date? I ask, hating how I sound less ambivalent and more inquisitive. I don't want to be inquisitive. I don't want to care one way or another.
She went home.
I squash the ridiculous slice of hope springing in my chest. Hope I have no business feeling, because it's not like we're together or ever will be. Not going for a round two, then, I imagine?
Probably not.
I feel my eye twitch. She didn't do it for you or something?
Or something.
He undoes the second button of his shirt collar, as though overheated.
It was casual.
Shaking his head slowly, he adds,
what I meant to say is, it just didn't work out. No chemistry.
The twitch threatens to turn into an all-out spasm. Once upon a time, I'd had no problem talking to Andre about his women, but now it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. I was under the impression that chemistry wasn't something you needed in your romantic life, I murmur. One and done, right? The words are out before I can stop them, and my hand itches to clap over my mouth and stop the verbal diarrhea. But Andre only laughs, the sound emerging as a deep rumble that hints at twisted sheets and scattered pillows.
Jealous, Zoe.
What? Absolutely not. He leans in, one elbow planted on the bar.
Are you sure? You've got that look on your face again.
My hand swipes over the bridge of my nose and down toward my chin, like I'm washing away all emotion from my face. Better?
Maybe.
He shifts his big body on the bar stool and reaches out to touch the corner of my mouth. It hardly constitutes anything of importance, but my breath hitches at the brief contact, just as he murmurs,
I can still see your frown.
Memories of movie nights and lunch outings flit through my brain, and I bat Andre's hand away. Don't, I warn him in a low voice. And just like that, as though I turned off a switch, the easygoing expression on his face evaporates. In its place is one that I've seen frequently, or I mean, one that I used to see frequently. An icy cold mask that won't melt. He wraps a hand around his cocktail and, ignoring the thin, neon-green straw, drinks straight from the rim. His Adam's apple bobs down, and he looks like something straight out of a soda commercial. My knees knock together. I hate him for doing this, for turning me on with nothing more than a stupid sip of his drink. Maybe I need another year of no contact with him to really get my brain in the right place.
So,
he says, breaking the terse silence.
You're 30 days.
Right. Back to business. 29, I reply instinctively.
All right. 29.
His tongue flicks out over his bottom lip to absorb a droplet of whiskey.
I've been thinking today.
I feign shock, going so far as to press a hand to my chest. So that's what held you up this morning. I had no idea that you couldn't think and do at the same time. Though his shoulders twitch, he ignores my taunting.
I think we're going to have to lay out some parameters.
For once, I agree with him. Yes, that would probably be a good idea. What's first on your list?
No sex.
A surprised cough splits my lungs in half, and I double over. He waits patiently for my recovery, ordering another whiskey and coke from the bartender, as well as a bottle of water. The bartender pops the water bottle on the bar first, and Andre immediately slides it over.
A peace offering,
he tells me,
for nearly killing you.
I'm surprised you don't want me dead, I rasp, accepting his offering with as much finesse as possible.
If you were dead, then who would revitalize my reputation?
Good point. When I fully recovered from my coughing spree, I say, can you handle no sex for a month? Something in his gaze flickers, something that I can't even begin to understand.
I'm not talking about no sex in general. I'm talking about not having sex with you.
My mouth falls open, and I'm not entirely surprised when a growl emerges from deep within my chest. Are you kidding me? I abandon the water on the bar to jab a finger at him angrily. I wouldn't have sex with you even if you begged me. The look he gives me would cause a weaker woman to lose her panties upon its delivery. But I stand strong. Been there, done that, and I have no intention of returning to buy the damn t-shirt.
We both know that I don't beg,
he finally says. There's a small pause. His gaze darts down to my lips, lingering, and then he adds,
the same can't be said for you, though.
Oh, my God. He did not just say that. From the way his brows arch as he sips his whiskey and coke, I bet he's feeling mightily pleased with himself right about now, which is, I decide, the only reason I retaliate. You're right, I say, in a sugary sweet tone. I begged you, Andre. I plant my palms on the bar stool next to him, crumpling his once crisp sports jacket, and jut my face close to his. I begged you to take me, and then, when I realized that you had nothing substantial hanging between your legs, I begged for you to finish as quickly as possible. Silence swirls around us, and I swallow a flare of satisfaction when his face contorts.
Did you just say that I have a small cock?
Folding my arms across my chest, I nod. If the condom fits, or, you know, it doesn't. I smile a little at my play on words, mentally pumping my fists into the air in victory. But then Andre's dark expression clears, and he laughs. He laughs so hard that his deep masculine ha-ha-ha's can be heard throughout Vittoria, earning us the attention of the very last couple in the restaurant. He laughs so hard that he wipes tears from his eyes with the pads of his thumbs. He laughs so hard that when he stops laughing, all I can do is stare at him, Because why is he laughing when I just said he has a small dick?
Oh, honey.
He says, his voice still rumbling with buried mirth.
Is that the lie you tell yourself at night to feel better?
Shock spins through me, and the words. All words have fled my body. I have no comeback. I have no witty reply to scathingly deliver. I have absolutely nothing, save for an undeniably burning hot face that grows hotter with each passing second. Because he's right, the jerk. Late at night, when I curl up in bed, aka the couch, three fluffy pillows stuffed beneath the back of my head, I can't help but think about the one day we gave in and had mind-blowingly good sex. Emphasis on the mind-blowing part. I don't consider myself a sex savant. I've always been keener to focus on my career, but I'd be lying if I said Andre didn't rock my world that day. He rocked it one night, and then it all came crumbling down the next. Andre finally stands, straightening to his full height of 6 foot something. He's taller than me, which is all that matters, though I'm no shrinking violet myself. He pulls a leather wallet from his pocket and drops 3 Andrew Jacksons on the bar, even though his tab couldn't have run higher than $20.
I'll stop by your office tomorrow,
he says, sliding the wallet back into his pocket and snagging his jacket out from under my hands with a sharp tug.
Let you think real hard on what we've talked about tonight.
A boot. It's so Canadian, so cute, and I feel the strangest urge to take my boot, the one on my foot, and kick him. He's been back in my life for all of 2 days, and nothing is going as planned. Was that supposed to be a double entendre? I demand, feeling off-kilter and not at all myself.
Definitely not,
he counters, his dark eyes warm with stifled humor.
Remember, we're not having sex again. Stop thinking about it.
I'm not thinking about it. You're the one throwing out metaphors about things that are hard.
I have no idea what you're talking about,
he tells me as he pulls on his jacket. The sleeves are creased from my hands, but he doesn't even attempt to flatten them out. You think you're so sly, Andre, but I can promise you that you aren't.
I wouldn't dare dream so.
Annoyance flickers through me. I'm not going home and thinking about you tonight.
I wouldn't dare dream that either.
He turns away, but just before he does us both a favor and actually leaves, he twists back around to give me his parting words.
And, for the record, I distinctly remember you telling me to take it easy because my small cock was too big.
He steps back and lifts his hand in a casual wave.
Have a good night, Zoe. I'll be at your office tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. sharp. Don't be late.
I sag against the bar stool, my brain spinning with everything that just went down. I don't even hear the bartender until she's right behind me gathering Andre's ridiculously sized tip. Is he really small? She asks me. He looks like the kind of guy who'd be hung like a horse. I don't even turn around, because I'm not sure I could lie to her face. He has the smallest penis I've ever seen, I fib. The smallest. Chapter 7. Zoe. 28 days left. By 9:45 a.m. the next morning, I am what some would call a hot mess. I snoozed my alarm one too many times, therefore losing the opportunity to completely pull myself together for my meeting with Andre. My dark hair is washed, but untamed, and thanks to the very dry March air, the static teased the strands into something unrecognizable during my morning commute. My coffee decided to leap out of its home, a styrofoam cup, and splattered my white shirt. I did what I could to clean the stain while I rode the T, Boston subway, on my way in. But no matter how many napkins I've pressed to the stain, the dark espresso now resembles something that I would rather not talk about. And, to top it all off, the heel of my favorite stiletto pair broke. Broke! There I was, striding down the street and giving myself a much-needed pep talk, when my poor Manolo Blahnik succumbed to a crack in the sidewalk. I went flying, The toe part of my stiletto went flying, but the damn heel remained wedged in the sidewalk's crevice like a white flag waving surrender. Walking 6 blocks through Boston's financial district on bare feet is an experience I never want to repeat. Honestly, thank God for convenience stores and cheap plastic flip-flops. So like I said, a hot mess. This is so not my day. Cracking open my day planner, I scribble in today's key points that I want to cover with Andre, namely the fact that we have 28 days to strip him of his bad boy image off the ice. Having worked with professional athletes before, it's always been a little strange to me as to where the line is drawn. The public loves guys like Marshall Hunt, one of Andre's teammates for the Blades. Since Hunt has just come up from the farm team, he rarely gets the same level of playtime on the ice. But the people love him. They love the way he stops to take selfies with fans after games. They love the way he jokes around with reporters, giving them his full attention whenever he's in the hot seat. From what I've gathered, Hunt also has a reputation as a ladies' man. He makes no secret about the fact that he dates supermodels and supermodels exclusively. He's practically the Leonardo DiCaprio of the hockey world. But the public adores him anyway. They adore his boyish good looks and the way he takes the time to hold open doors for the various women he dates, even when they change every weekend or every other night. The public does not adore Andre. He verbally snaps at the media, and seeing the way he blew off Suzanne last night, it doesn't seem that he's all that kind to the ladies either. Makes sense, considering the way he treated me, too. I have no doubt that I'm up for a battle today, but I'm hoping that he'll see reason. Above all else, Andre Beaumont loves hockey. Without sponsors, without a willingness to play like a team member on and off the ice, this could very well be his last season in the NHL. Teams will take a risk on a player that's physically injured, but they're less likely to keep a player who is a liability to the structure or reputation of their organization. A knock comes at the door, and I don't even have to look up to see who's standing there. Cliché as it might be, but the air changes with his entrance. It shifts and crackles and tenses with anticipation. Or maybe that's just my anticipation to get this over and done with. I feign nonchalance, still scribbling in my planner. Play it cool, girl. Play it cool.
Good morning, Andre.
The chair across from me creaks under the sudden onslaught of his weight. Like most hockey players, Andre is big. A hulking body of pure muscle that is put to the test on a daily basis.
Morning,
he says, the O drawn out in true Canadian flair.
That's a nice shirt you've got on there.
My fingers clenched tightly around the pin. I spilled coffee this morning. I glance up in time to see the way he tilts his head in thought.
Very well placed, eh?
Perhaps I should have elaborated. When I spilled the Starbucks blend this morning, it somehow, in some stars misaligning sort of way, splattered me right in the boob area. Specifically in the left nipple zone. My eyes squeeze shut, and I lift a hand to shield the evidence of my embarrassment from his perusal. I was already running late, otherwise I would have gone back home to change shirts. It's been a rough morning.
It would seem that way,
he murmurs, and I can hear the laughter brimming just beneath the surface. Are you going to stare at my chest for our entire meeting?
Open your eyes and you'll see I'm not looking at your chest now.
With a deep breath for strength, I glance up to find that what he says is true. He isn't looking at my chest. His gaze is on my face, and for a moment so brief that I swear I imagine it, I feel like I've jumped back to that second before he first kissed me. In the vacuum of time, I recall his hands lifting to my face to cup my cheeks, his breathing rustling the top of my hair we stood so close, his mouth moving, expelling the words,
I need you, Zoe.
Before he closed the distance between us. Now in my brand spanking new office, I'm highly aware of my altered breathing and also of the way that I'm squeezing my pen so tightly that I'm surprised it doesn't snap in half. Worry skits through me. Can I do this? The reminder that I'm on a trial run with Golden Lights Media kicks me back into gear.
I've submitted so many job applications in the last year, gone on so many interviews that end up with a rejection letter, leading off with, "Thank you for your interest, but we have found another candidate who better suits our needs." I'm not arrogant enough to believe that I'm the best publicist in existence. I'm not. But during my half decade of work in Detroit, I certainly made a name for myself within the business. I got stuff done. I made miracles happen to the unlikeliest of clients. But no one wanted to give me another chance in Detroit, which led to my move. If it doesn't work out with Golden Lights Media, I honestly have no idea what will be my next step. I flatten my hand across my day planner, grounding myself for what's to come next. We should probably get started. His wide shoulders lift in a casual shrug.
I'm yours for the next hour.
The words send my brain on a tailspin. Technically, you're mine for the next 28 days. He grins, and it's such a rare thing that I almost sit back in my chair in shock.
Who's counting?
I am. Not that I'll ever admit that out loud. We both should be. I want this job, and you want to keep your career. We both benefit from this partnership if we can just work together. He's silent after that, as if pondering my words. His dark eyes flit to my planner and then to the document I have pulled up on the shiny new desktop computer that arrived this morning. A white one, because obviously Walter Collins has some sort of weird obsession with the color. Andre sits back in his chair, and though I can't see his legs beyond the desk, I know his knees must be splayed in that typical hot guy pose. He looks relaxed, at ease, though his gaze remains sharp.
You're looking mighty comfortable here.
I want to be here.
Why Boston?
At the abruptness of his question, I narrow my eyes. I'm not stalking you, Andre.
I didn't say that you were.
You implied it.
Well, if the stalker fits.
Reflexively, I cross my arms over my chest. My dad lives here, if you remember. He owns Vittoria. Slowly, he nods, ignoring my not-so-subtle jab at our past, and a lock of his dark hair falls over his forehead in a ridiculously distracting manner. It's like a calling card for me to push it back, to run my hands through the thick strands.
Ah, so that explains yesterday's appearance.
I don't want to think about yesterday. I don't want to think about last year. I want to focus on the now. Let's get back to this, shall we? I tap my pen on the desk impatiently. I think we need to start with a bang. Something big to let sponsors know that you're keen on changing things around. Andre scrubs a hand over his unshaven jawline.
We talking about charity donations?
He asks, dropping his elbow to his knee as he shifts forward. The new position stretches his gray t-shirt across his broad chest, and I check back the need to salivate. Andre might be an unfeeling jerk, but he is without a doubt a sexy, unfeeling jerk. It's unfair. I tell you, so unfair. Gathering my wits, or trying to anyway, I select a sheet of paper from Andre's case file and slide it across the desk with the tip of my finger. Not exactly. Providing assistance to others via charities has never been your problem. Dark eyes meet mine.
Is there a compliment in there somewhere?
I didn't intend for there to be one, no. He shakes his head with a masculine chuckle, and I swear he mutters the word ballbuster under his breath. What did you say?
I said that I didn't think there was a compliment.
He cocks his eyebrow, daring me to question him. I try a different tactic, mainly because I'm weak when it comes to pretending trash talk isn't the highlight of my day, especially with Andre. Wouldn't want your head to get too large, I say, throwing down the gauntlet. Take that.
Are we talking about my reportedly small cock again, Zoe?
Surprised laughter escapes me. I forget sometimes. I forget that under all that broodiness and sharpness is a man with a quick wit. It's hard to remember when he hardly ever lets that man show up. No more talking of penises. I point at the sheet, which he's yet to even look at. I've signed you up for a few events this week. They work around your schedule, and I think they'll do you some good. The first three aren't up for discussion. He finally drags the paper close, and I see the moment the words sink in because he lets loose a string of curses.
Hell no,
he grunts emphatically, running a hand through his messy, dark hair. His finger jabs down at the black ink, and his chin comes up so that he can glower magnificently at me.
Absolutely not.
Non-negotiable. I called your agent, and he agrees. His mouth falls open just before he cranks his jaw shut with such force that I hear his teeth crack together.
Joe wouldn't agree to this.
Watching the big and the bad Andre Beaumont unravel is now the highlight of my day. No, make that my year. Knowing that Joe agreed to this must be killing him. I asked Joe to reconfirm via email. I had a feeling that you might throw a fit about this. From behind gritted teeth, he seethes.
I'm not throwing a fit, Zoe.
I'm sorry. Perhaps I should use another word instead. How about tantrum? He blows out a big breath, then pushes back off his elbow so he's slouched in the chair again. All he needs is a cigarette tucked between his full lips, and I'd swear I was looking at a young John Travolta, circa Grease, minus the slicked back hair, of course.
I'm not doing an interview with Fame.
You've done it before, I point out. Fame is a woman's magazine that has popped onto the scene in the last few years, no doubt in an effort to shove Cosmopolitan out of the way. I can't say whether their plans for world domination are working, but that doesn't matter. What does matter is that they are willing to feature Andre Beaumont, even with his less-than-stellar reputation. Or have you forgotten?
Yes, but...
He breaks off with a sharply drawn breath.
The last time Fame interviewed me, it was about the game. People named me...
Sexiest man of the year, I supply, because there's no point dancing around the issue. If he wants his career back on track, then he needs to do the grunt work. And that's proving to the world that he isn't a complete a-hole when it comes to the female sex. What bothers you more? The fact that you're scheduled for an interview with one of the top women's magazines in the world, or the topic you'll have to discuss? His palm lands with a thwack on the sheet I've given him.
Is it really the best for my career to talk about the various ways I've scammed women? For the record, I don't scam.
For the record, Joe obviously thinks you need to learn some manners, I tell him. When I notice the way his expression shudders, I forge forth and refuse to feel guilty about going behind his back to chit-chat with Joe, the sports agent he'd had since he signed with the Red Wings as a rookie. Steepling my fingers, I focus on the gold watch encircling his left wrist. It looks like it costs more than my salary has earned me in the last 5 years combined. Listen, Andre, I'm here to rebuild your reputation. He opens his mouth to counter that, and I head him off, already knowing he's about to take a dip down memory lane. We can't change your actions in the past, but we can work on how you move forward. The first step is talking about your desire to be seen in a different light with a publication that will ham it up. Fame will ham it up.
I don't think it's a good idea.
With a semblance of patience that I don't actually feel, I fold my hands over my knees. Why's that? Because you might come off as, I don't know, vulnerable and human for once? Andre's mouth flatlines at that, and he shifts in his chair, looking uncomfortable to have his sins exposed under the spotlight.
I can be vulnerable.
He pauses, then averts his gaze.
I'm not made of ice, Zoe.
Sure, I say agreeably with a nod. You cried after you won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, but again, I'm not talking about hockey here. I'm talking about you, and the way you interact with people that aren't decked out in pads, jockstraps, and hockey sticks.
You just had to add in the jockstrap bit, didn't you?
I struggle with fighting off a smile, and he knows it, too. In a voice laden with sexual promise, he adds,
I know you, Zoe. And I know what game you're playing at.
He points to my PR plan, then lifts his gaze to my face.
Out of every publication you could have approached, you chose this one, probably with the hope that it'll embarrass me.
His hands rest on the desk, and he slowly unfolds his body from the chair. My chin tips up to make sure we don't break eye contact, because if this is a face-off, I refuse to lose. I mimic his stance, dropping my palms to the desk and leveraging my weight to a standing position. I lean forward, too, until we're in the same breathing space, until we're so close that if I wanted to, if I dared, one more inch would land my mouth on his. Do I dare? Do I even want to? My eyes drop to his mouth, and for one idiotic second, I wonder if he tastes the same, like the mint-flavored Tic Tacs he used to snack on throughout the day. Can a person change so drastically in a year? I doubt it, but you never really know. Hell, maybe I'm the one who tastes different, like a juxtaposing cocktail of bitterness and optimism. The pour of each depends on the day of the week and the hour of the day. When I'm sprawled out on my makeshift bed at my dad's house, thinking of my old job and the vacations I used to splurge on without a second thought, bitterness wins out. Always. It's not something I particularly like about the new me. I don't like it at all.
Zoe.
He says my name like he can't imagine not doing so. Like he did in that laundry room, right before he pushed me up against the door and set my body on fire. My eyes flutter shut, and I inhale so deeply that I can hear its shuddery crackle in the silence of my office.
Zoe.
I'm not ready to look at him yet. What?
I'll do this interview on one condition.
What's the condition? His mint-scented breath wafts over my face.
You have to look at me first.
My eyes crack open, and he's right there, big, imposing. His dark eyes are centered on my mouth, and I've got half a mind to ask him if what he wants is a panty-wetting kiss. I wonder if he would say yes. Instead, I murmur, condition completed. His head shakes a little, and his dark hair boyishly sweeps over his forehead. My hand itches to push the strands back, but that's my lust talking, and so I close the door on those crazy thoughts.
No,
he says.
That wasn't my condition.
You can't up it to two conditions on a whim. The papers under his palm slip as he leans back, away from me, away from the unspoken desire to throw everything to the floor and do it on my pristine, white desk. Of the two of us, he's probably the only one thinking straight. Personally, I blame my hormones. The time of the month just came and went, and we all know how that goes.
Here's my condition.
He steps around his vacated chair to the back, so that there is ample space between us. Maybe he needs it just as much as I do.
I'll do the interview with Fame, but you've got to come with me. I'm assuming it's not just a phone gig.
My heart stills, and suddenly it's hard to find air. Excuse me? I wheeze out, clutching my chest like it might give out and fail me. Did you just suggest that I come with you? To New York City? Absolutely not. He stares me down over the crooked ridge of his nose, broken from countless skirmishes in the rink, and I resist the urge to fidget. The shiner on his cheek from the other day is nearly gone now, too.
You did it when you worked for me in Detroit.
Yes. Well, back then... There's no good excuse here. I used to attend big interviews with him. Largely, I did it because my old firm made it a requirement. But the other part of me, the part of me that viewed Andre as a friend and not just as a client, wanted to ensure that everything went smoothly for him from start to finish. I don't believe that Golden Lights Media has the same protocol, or at least it's not mentioned in the training manual. Also, Andre and I are no longer friends, which means that this whole go-with-me thing is null and void. Striving to effuse some hardness into my voice, I say, unfortunately, I don't think I'll be able to swing that. Apparently, that's not going to fly with this pro-hockey player. He points at me with his index finger.
You have one client, Zoe.
That finger swivels until it's aimed at himself.
Me. The way I'm looking at this, you don't have a viable excuse to get out of this unless...
Breaking off, he gives me a considering look. It's a look that I can't even begin to interpret. But when he makes a move to tug on his left earlobe, I peel back and shove a hand up. Oh, this is not good. The left earlobe thing is his tell. Always was, and apparently still is. No. I put up my other hand, too, for good measure. Whatever you're thinking, stop thinking it right now. He tugs again on the same ear, and then a grin. One so sexy it actually hurts, cuts across his face.
Now, Zoe, I'm not the one who said that this job is their last hope.
My hand falls to my side as horror seeps into my veins. You wouldn't, I whisper. With his hand shoved deep into the front pockets of his jeans, he saunters toward me, cutting around the desk until he's there, right in front of me. My butt hikes back against the lip of the desk, my pencil skirt indecently riding up my thighs. I struggle to peer unaffected, even as I glance down to see if my Spanx are putting on a show. They're not, thank God. But that doesn't mean anything, because he is so close, and I don't know what to do. And every rational thought has fled my brain in favor of one word. Abort! 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 There's not a chance in hell of that happening. He swaggers so close that my hands have no choice but to find purchase on either side of my hips. He swaggers so close that my knees part, the hem of my skirt tightening across my splayed thighs. Get your mind back in the game, girl. Get your mind back in the game. Naturally, I say the first word that comes to mind. With no lead-up whatsoever, I blurt out, I thought we weren't going to have sex again. Oh, that was not supposed to be a question. Andre's full mouth tilts at the corners like he finds me hilarious. I'm not hilarious. I'm panicking, mainly because while my brain is shouting for me to take cover and hide, my body, traitorous thing that it is, wants to lean into his touch, wants to feel his fingers dance their way over my skin. It's an absolute betrayal, I tell you. Andre's gaze trails down my body, lingering at my coffee stain, before flicking back up to my face.
We're not having sex.
Oh, is that right? He says it so flippantly, whereas I'm over here panting like I've just had the best orgasm all year. Considering that I've been living a completely orgasm-free life since moving to Boston, that's not much of a feat. Peeling a hand away from the desk, I motion at the scant distance between us. Then please let me know why you're trying to get between my legs.
Honey,
he murmurs, voice low.
If I were trying to get between your legs for the real deal, you'd know it.
I look down and feel heat swarm to my face. Then why are you up? He follows the direction of my gaze and then laughs. Laughs! I want to crawl into a ditch somewhere and stay there for good.
Case in point,
he tells me silkily.
If I had a small cock, I doubt you'd be able to tell that I was up.
Yep, this is the perfect time to go find a ditch. I'll stay there. Maybe make it feel quite homey by choosing a spot near an oceanfront view, with some pretty flowers and a fairy garden, because why the hell not? I throw up a hand to cover my eyes. Can we not go down that road again? His laugh is throaty and too temptingly masculine for my liking.
You brought it up.
I point at him with my free hand, even as the other remains clamped over my eyes. You cornered me.
You want me to do this interview? Then you're going to be at my side the entire time.
His fingers tug at mine, one by one, until his face is there, his dark eyes glittering.
Unless you want me to pay a visit to Walter on my way out of here today.
You're blackmailing me? His head cocks to the side.
Maybe I just want your company.
Now I know you're lying. Abruptly, he pushes away from me, and the space gives me the first opportunity to breathe since he decided to play dirty. The relief is short-lived. As his long legs eat up the distance toward my office door, he tosses over his shoulder.
Your schedule from hell has the interview set for this Thursday. Text me your address. We'll take my car.
The thought of Andre running into my family sends me surging toward him. No, you can't. I mean, we'll meet here, at Golden Lights. Black eyes land on my face.
Your host, Zoe. Let me pick you up.
As if we're going on a date and not a road trip from hell. Words flee my brain, and all I can do is watch him as he pauses in the doorframe, one big hand planted on the wood. Thanks to his size, he has to duck a little, probably in worry that he might scrape the top of his head and lose some much-needed brain cells.
I'll see you on Thursday,
he says. With a closed fist, he knocks on the frame and then offers me a brief smile.
Nice flip-flops, by the way. Very chic.
And with that parting comment, Andre leaves me to stand there, my feet stuck in a pair of $1 sandals and a coffee stain over my left nipple. Chapter 8. Zoe. 21 days left. It's the butt crack of dawn when Andre pulls up outside of my house on the following Thursday. 4 a.m. I'm convinced that the only reason 4 a.m. should ever be seen is if you're stumbling home after an all-night boozer and you've both lost your shoes and your dignity. While I recently had to put down my favorite pair of stilettos, R.I.P. Manolo, my dignity is mostly still intact. Somewhat. Andre's headlights flash again, illuminating the dark living room where I'm camped out on the couch. I've been ready since 2, thanks to the jittery nerves that haven't erased since I first laid down for the evening. The walls of the living room glow, shadows dancing across its dark expanse as the car lights stress the driver's impatience. With a groan of displeasure, I roll onto my side, legs slipping onto the floor. My feet go into an old pair of gym shoes, and my hand grapples in the dark for the strap of my oversized purse. Quietly, so I don't wake my family, I escape out the front door. Since my dad lives in the heart of Somerville, a close suburb of Boston, the street is lit with street lamps, and ambulances' sirens kick off in the distance, and I swear I can hear Tom Fed's baby crying bloody murder next door. But the interior of Andre's car is dark, so dark that I can barely see him sitting in the driver's seat. His door opens, like a shadow creeping through the night. He unfolds his body from the car, leaving the driver's side door ajar.
"Want me to put your bag in the trunk?"
he asks, his voice still rusty with sleep. I'm ashamed to admit it, but the rustiness does things to my girl parts, things I would rather not feel when it comes to Andre Beaumont. I glance down at my bag. I stocked up on snacks for the ride. His shoes crunch over the gravel until he's 2 feet away. In the early morning, he's more silhouette than anything else. His features are a mosaic of slashed shadows stretching over the bridge of his nose and carving out the hollows of his cheeks. His eyes, though, are obscured, thanks to the baseball hat he's wearing. I want to reach up and tip it back with my finger, get a read on his mood this morning. In other words, is this drive to New York City going to be as painful as I imagine it will be? God, I hope not. Andre's chin dips, indicating my bag.
I thought maybe we could stop for some breakfast along the way. I know how you get when you're hungry.
Surprise straightens my shoulders. Not going to lie, I thought you'd take the starve-me approach this morning. Eyes still hidden by the brim of his ball cap, I watch the way he swallows. Hard.
I thought about it, trust me. Just let you waste away during the drive.
How sweet of you, I mutter. What, are you going to toss my body out in Connecticut or something? His lips curl up in a wicked grin.
Nah, Zoe. I was thinking more along the lines of the Jersey Turnpike.
My heart stutters at the humor in his tone, even as I outwardly scoff. Always a gentleman, Mr. Beaumont.
Gentleman? Me?
He lifts his ball cap, teasing me with the promise of seeing his eyes, before resettling the hat over his head, Brim pulled low.
I think you've got the wrong hockey player.
I've certainly got the wrong something, that's for sure.
Already regretting having me as a client?
I won't if you promise to behave. He reaches down and wraps his fingers around my purse strap.